Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And if my voice is a little hoarse, it's because I've been talking to thousands of people at book signings. It's been terrific. Golden, Colorado, thanks to all of you folks down there. And now, believe it or not, in Wisconsin, at the Wisconsin State Fair. Lots of readers out here, lots of new readers out here. And let's see, I think next Wednesday I go to Billings, Montana for the Montana Fair. And then 4 or 5 days later, the Brown County Fair in South Dakota. Several days after that, down to Nebraska State Fair. It's like go, 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 go. The schedule for book signings for all you Threads West fans is on the website, www.threadswestseries.com, and just click on book signings. It will tell you where I'm at and when, and hope to see you there. Also, on other book news, we'll get that out of the way up front here because we got a lot to cover in this show. In other book news, book 4 is on the trucks, headed to the shelves. And the release date looks like sometime between the 22nd and 29th. We'll be able to firm that up, I think, here probably by Monday or Tuesday with a specific date. Woohoo! And book 5 is kind of on schedule for December 5th. And book 6, kind of on schedule for the end of April. That's the Civil War book, Blood of Glory to Pass. So you got a bunch of reading coming at you, you Threads West fans. You can reserve the books for free on the publisher's website, threadswestseries.com. They don't charge you a dime. A week or two before the release, you'll get an email telling you all your different alternatives to buy it, whether it's on Barnes & Noble, which I prefer over Amazon if you'd like to have a bookstore in 5 years. Or maybe you'd like your kids to grow up without a bookstore. Then, of course, you can always get it on Amazon. You can get it from the publishers. We'll have all that stuff lined out for you. So that's what's happening on the book, in the book world, shall we say. Well, this morning I'm going to give you another little historical story, because all you folks just like that story, and so do I. I love these. This one is going to be, I'm not sure it's fun, but I think you'll find it interesting. And it kind of plays into the show because the story is one of chance, happen chance, and fate. Whereas the show is a diametrically opposite of that. It is a plan and a design and an evil framework that has been set up for decades and decades by the global elite. And that's to create a new, you know, some people call it the New World Order, some people call it One World Government, some people call it globalization. All of those things are apropos, and they all mean the same thing, no matter how one tries to twist the words or what nomenclature you use. And this is going to be a bigger task than I thought. I've been getting information from a number of listeners. Thank you for that. And additionally, I've been doing a bunch of research. Let me tell you that the web of the very, very, very elite, the 300, should we say, puppeteers of the planet, and that's about what it is, 300 puppeteers, they are cloaked in secrecy. They achieve their ends by financial domination, financial terrorism, financial blackmail and extortion, and when they have to, by murder. It is a scary onion to peel back, but I think that you'll know a lot more over the next several shows. What I'm going to try and do this show is just give you the foundation. Number one, because I have to get up early. Well, it already is morning. I have to get up in a few hours and go sign books. But most importantly, because this needs to sink in. I also want to apologize. The wrong second audio bar was put up last week. It was not the show on the Constitution that I wanted you to get, and I had no chance to check it, so I didn't learn about it till several days later. I'm hoping that with this show, the right audio bar, a description and background and history and substance kind of description of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence is the one that is put up. Because that, folks, which is one of the reasons, of course, it's under attack, that, folks, is one of the walls, the firewalls between us and them. But that's only if we maintain it. That's only if we defend it. That's only if we need, if we do what we need to do when we need to do it to make sure it stays intact and remains the firewall it was designed to be. So, I'll tell you what, let's get started. First of all, our story. So this is in 1900, the turn of the century. And there's this guy by the name of John Luther Jones. And he needed some extra money, and he agreed to some overtime. And he was 37 years old. He had just finished a run as the engineer of a train called the Cannonball Express. This may click a light bulb here in some of you listeners' minds. When he left the cab of the Cannonball Express in Memphis, he was told his replacement had some kind of problem, a problem at home, whatever it was, and that his replacement engineer could not make the run as had been originally intended. Jones was a nice guy, plus he needed the overtime. So he said, hey, I'll take the second shift. My friend can go home, and no problem. Anyway, his co-workers had given him a nickname, since there were a number of Joneses around the rail yard, as you can imagine. And they took the name of the town that he was born in, which is Casey, Kentucky. That's K-A-Y-C-E, Kentucky. And they called him K-C-, Casey. Eventually, that became Casey Jones. So Casey Jones took the throttle of the Cannonball, and he headed out for Canton, Mississippi. And he hoped to make up some time for this, because they had lost about a half an hour on schedule with his shift change and the confusion with his friend having to leave and him having to take the overtime and the extra shift. Anyway, Jones was probably tired, but the line dispatcher in Canton, Mississippi, had left a freight train. He must have been more tired than Jones. He left a freight train on the main line, never told anybody, didn't flip the switches, didn't have the warning lights on along the tracks. So Casey Jones comes around a corner, full throttle, in the Cannonball Express, and he sees this freight train out ahead, knows he can't stop, and he tells his fireman, the guy stoking the engine, tells his fireman to jump, and then he pulled on the brake system all the way until the crash. He could have jumped, could have saved his life, but he knew that every mile per hour he could reduce that train speed would save lives of the people in the cars behind the engine. Anyway, Casey Jones was the only person killed in that wreck. Had he jumped, probably everybody on that train would have been either killed or severely maimed, injured, what have you. So Jones was killed, but his actions saved the passenger and the rest of the crew. So that, folks, is the rest of the story about Casey Jones and the Cannonball Express. Now, you know, fate conspired for poor Casey. It conspired because his friend had to go. It conspired because he needed the overtime money. It conspired because he was a nice guy and said, I'll take the second shift. It conspired because the line dispatcher, didn't tell anybody. He left the freight train on the main lines, didn't put up the warning lights, didn't tell anybody there was a train in the way of the Cannonball Express. That is, maybe it was some manifest destiny. But you must say that it was an amazing series of dominoes that contributed to an unforeseen mishap. That is not true with globalization. Globalization is a plan. It is a design. It has been around a long time. Now, some of you listening to me are nodding your heads in agreement. And some of you listening to me are going, oh my, that Reed, that Wyoming hayseed, he's gone off the deep end. He's off the cliff. You know, he needs, we need to send him a roll of tinfoil so he can wrap it around his head. Well, I wish that was true. But this is not a conspiracy theory. This is fact. I'm going to give you some quotes this morning from some names that you will absolutely recognize that acknowledge the existence of this elitist conspiracy, this beat of the drums of globalization, of new world order, of one world government. And I think when I'm done with this show, you'll at least have the foundation that you're going to need to believe, and if you don't believe, at least to listen with an open mind as we go through the next several shows and start to peel this rotten, oh boy, is it rotten, whew, stinky rotten, onion back for what the elites, the 300 puppeteers of the planet, have planned for the other 7 billion of us, because you know, they're much smarter than we are. They know best. Oh, and they also make money doing it. Imagine that. First of all, let's step back. Because one of the things that you need to know is that virtually all the conflict that's going on the planet right now, that's going on in this country right now, yes, there's politics, and yes, there's ideology, and yes, there's, you know, power-hungry Muppets in the Congress and the Senate and running for president and all this kind of stuff. Sure. But all those people, wittingly or unwittingly, are merely puppets in this grand plan. Because you see, the conflict that we're experiencing, nationally, internationally, that is the cover for these people. That is the genesis of fear that they hope to use by promotion, by the way, through the media outlets, which are owned by, who would imagine, the 300 puppeteers. That's right. Virtually every media outfit on the planet, with the exception of some independent left-wing and independent right-leaning media sources, are owned and controlled by the global elitists. Every single one of them. I'm going to go into this in more detail over the next several shows, give you facts, figures, who owns what. I can tell you, like, the four banks. Let me step back. The puppeteers control the banks, the banking system, and the federal banks, that is the central banks, of virtually every country in the world. It's controlled by the puppeteers. Number two, those banks, particularly the four, we'll call it the horsemen of the apocalypse, based in the United States, of course, own a majority, listen to this now, a majority of the stock in virtually every Fortune 500 company out there. This is really, when I'm done with this little series of shows, I think you're going to be, you know, you're going to be scratching your head going, holy smokes. But let's start with what's projected for the year 2040 in terms of population and conflict and social strife and all that kind of stuff. And why am I doing that? Because the globalists play long ball. As you're going to see by some of the quotes I'm going to give you, which go all the way back to like the 1940s and even previous to that, this is not a new game. This is a long-term game plan that have been put in place by the elites, and I should say really the generations of elites. It may have been started by their fathers, but now it's being puppeteered by the sons and daughters. One of the things, not only does conflict cover their butts, you know, lay down a smokescreen for what they're doing, not only is it a genesis of fear, which of course makes people more dependent on government, and government is controlled by the banks, and the banks are controlled by the elite. You can kind of see where this leads, can't you? Inequality, So the more success they have with their little globalistic scheme, as you may have noticed if you watch the stats at all over the last 20 years, the more inequality there is on the planet between nations and within nations, including this nation. Demographic trends. There is no accident that we have a youth bulge, as it's called. It's defined, by the way, a youth bulge is a peak on a demographic graph of median age in which the bulk of a population occurs between the ages of 15 to 21. Many countries around the planet, including our own, have a youth bulge. Youth are exploitable. Youth are malleable. Particularly youth who have been brainwashed for the last 15 years in an education system which the left has infiltrated. And that left, their strings are being pulled by the puppeteers. I mean, everything flows back to this 300, give or take, people on the planet who have, by the way, immeasurable wealth. They can throw whatever they want at this project. Some of them have more wealth than some of the countries on the planet. By 2040, about 65%, 6 billion people are going to live in urban areas. And we're going to have a world population of close to 10 billion. Right now we're at 7.2, 7.3, something like that. To put this in context for you, 2040, folks, is 21 years away. It's actually 20 years and 6 months away. It's not a very long time. In fact, it's a drop in the bucket in terms of the history of the planet and the history of the major players on the international stage. There is, as more and more people are kind of driven into the urban areas by the conflict and the strife and the inequality, which the policies that the puppeteers have put in place through the banks and the governments they control, so too will strife increase. Social strife, religious strife. These urban centers are going to become centers of criminality and disaffection, and probably will breed extremist ideologies we haven't even heard of yet. But listen, the more unstable things are, the more cover the elites have for the implementation of their kind of grand plan, which is a one world government that controls, I might add, every aspect of your life. Part of their shtick, if you will, is climate change. So you have this population bulge, this demographic bulge of young people. And what have they been taught? Oh, yeah, let's see, what did the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx say? The world's over in 12 years. So they have this bulge that they have thoroughly indoctrinated and brainwashed, believing about climate change. Well, I guess I don't need to ask you the rhetorical question about who controls all the energy, whether it's fossil fuels or alternative energy on the planet. Huh. Imagine that, the 300 puppeteers. Yes. So the more they can whip up this bulge, if you will, demographic bulge, the more they can whip them up because of fear, the better it is for them. Then they have their little, without even knowing it, they have their little stormtroopers out on the turf. Should we say, running interference and throwing blocks for the big boys to rumble down the field. Probably weapons of mass destruction are going to generate even increased instability in the future. If you think there's instability with Iran and North Korea, you just wait till some pipsqueak nation gets their hands on nuclear or biological devices. You just wait until that happens. Nations that have nothing to lose. You know, your worst adversary, your nightmare, is somebody who has nothing to lose, who doesn't care and has nothing to lose. Anyway, the increase, the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, whether they're biological, nuclear, chemical, you name it, is going to generate instability in and of itself. There's going to be a shift in the military balance of power, and at least regionally. Terrorist groups, they're likely to acquire and use chemical, biological, radiological weapons, which is going to create, of course, further turmoil, further fear, further division, further finger pointing. It is it's a rather diabolical plan. The new ideologies that will emerge, and you can see this getting stoked. You can see the Muslim populations getting stoked. The Jewish populations getting stoked. The Christian populations getting stoked. So, but you're going to see new ideologies, new religions. And the ideologies that do emerge are going to be driven by religion, ethnic differences, nationalism, inequality, or some type of combination of those factors. And all this, think about it. The elites have set up a system by which they control the government. You could say it's actually part of the deep state. Maybe it is the deep state. The policies they put in place fail, creating more strife, divisions, social injustice, financial injustice, whatever you want, any of the terms you want to use, which creates more fear, which gives the government more power, which gives the elites more power to implement a broader range of rules, restrictions, credos to live your life by since you're the proletariat. There's going to be, I'll find this sheet. So the next 20 years is going to be an era of transition. It's going to be characterized by instability. You're going to hear lots and lots of crapola, more and more and more, about the climate change theory of, the world going extinct. No state, no group or individual can meet these challenges. In other words, these people have created a crisis on many different levels. Personal finances, personal security. By creating that situation through their policies, they get more power. Because, look, people who are hungry and people who are scared and people who are desperate for security against all these other things which are being manipulated by the, we'll call them the, I can't call them that on the air. We'll just say the 300, how's that? It's a vicious circle and they're winning, folks. I don't want to cut any mustard with you. I don't want to take any icing off the cake. I don't want to sweeten up the cookie dough to get it down your throat. They're winning big time. The distribution of global energy is going to shift, and global power is going to shift. There's going to be globalization is going to be underpinned, think about this now, by the rapid development of global telecommunications and other forms of communication. Just think what the internet has done in terms of binding the world, creating the feeling of a world. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. There's going to be a pervasive information environment. And basically the global population will be capable of being online all the time, politically at least. Globalization will likely raise the level of interdependence between various nation states and individuals who operate within this new globalized economy. There's going to be I'll read this to you directly. The physical manifestations of globalization are likely to be most apparent in the globalized core, which comprises the most interdependent and economically successful regions of the world. Resources, folks, trade, capital, intellectual property, are all going to be subject to being taken, shall we say, in a different direction than you'd like to go. There's going to be, there'll probably be sufficient energy, food, and fresh water for this increase in the world's population and its counterpart, in the United States, which is, while is a decrease of population of native-born and an increase of population of foreign-born, most of them illegals. There's going to be, first of all, distribution, access, sufficient, you know, how to get the energy from one place to another, or the food, or the water, or whatever. That's where they'll will turn the screws. You know, you may be, if you're a fisherman in Florida and you're used to unloading your fish off the docks, that may go into a container, be frozen, and head up north. So, one of the things, look, there's probably going to be a shift in agricultural patterns. Now, some of that has to do with the slight increase in temperature from carbon dioxide in the United States. I mean, the bottom line is Red China throws out two or three times the pollutants that we do just to keep their people warm, never mind manufacturing. Using climate change, the elite is going to generate more and more money, fees and taxes and permits, you name it. One of the things that we can do is keep our eyes open on this. I've given you some pretty juicy leads right now. You'll see it. I guess you won't see it on the website. There's going to be almost no articles on the website this week, folks. Just the crew is scattered in too many directions, don't have time to do it, and I'd rather not do it than just slap up some articles that don't mean anything to you, that don't tie in with what I'm trying to tell you here. Here's another quote out of this report. A shift in agricultural patterns and the distribution of grain growing areas, coupled with the rise, if you will, of plants and animal diseases, it's going to be an ugly time for agriculture in the next 10 years. I'm not sure they'll have it sorted out then. In fact, I'm pretty sure that they won't. The proportion they are projecting, that of those 6.5 billion, that's amazing, 6.5 billion people in urban areas, only about 70% of the remainder can be used to store things, to lower the plates and such that we use to move things. It is, let me start over. This is a really complex subject, and my job is to distill it down so you hear it once and you get it. Now, some of the folks can be following my mumblings right now, but this is so critical. This is such a foundational thing to globalization. The frequency, the scale, the duration of humanitarian crisis, you can almost count on them existing. I mean, it's just the way it is. The poorer states are not going to be able to access the necessary resources for these people to play, for these people to move where they want to move, think like they want to think, etc. The shift in climate. The shift in climate, which they've brainwashed the younger generation, that population bulge, into, is going to continue to play a major factor in things. And it also provides great cover for nasty things that want to come down the hall. Just want to let you know. There is there's a real good chance that a terrorist group is going to get their paws on a weapon of mass destruction. I can't tell you what it is, where it is, who built it, but that's going to happen. It's just as simple as that. There's going to be a proliferation of modern weapons and technology, because we're going to give it away, folks. You know, my whole thing is to keep you informed. Your whole thing needs to be to listen to me, form your own opinion. You may agree or not agree. Or I may be out of books, in which case the local Barnes & Noble carries them. They can get them for you. So that's kind of the scoop. Now, that's just some of the foundation I wanted to give you tonight. There's unfortunately a whole lot more. So we're going to switch gears just a little bit, and we're going to kind of move over to the segment after this 2040 prognostication that I gave you. And this segment is what the globalists and the elitists really want to do, the games they play now, the smoke covers they need now, and quotes from some very, very famous individuals warning about exactly what we have right now. Do you remember John F. Kennedy's assassination? I mean, who could forget it? November 1963. November 22nd, to be exact. And, you know, I was playing touch football. Or maybe it was flag football. It was one or the other. In this big field we called Pencho's Lot. And we got out and get in just as easy as we can do it. When John F. Kennedy was shot, most people don't know this. Now, I've expressed my frustration and my absolute disbelief of the final report of the Kennedy assassination. I've told you this several times. There's no way that Lee Harvey Oswald, there's no way. I mean, I know firearms. That being a mediocre marksman in the Marines could, from a standing position, hit 3 out of 3 kill shots at 100 to 200 yards on a moving target with no rest, leaning in the window. There's no way. Can't happen. Which, of course, brings us back to who really pulled the trigger and where were they. But this is not a show about Kennedy's assassination. This is a show to give you some background. John F. Kennedy was killed, you probably don't know this, but he was killed in June, like a step back, in June of 1963. Kennedy had signed an executive order which basically would have resulted in the disbanding of the Federal Reserve. He had actually ordered the Treasury Department to start printing Treasury dollar bills. Not Federal Reserve dollar bills. If you take a dollar bill out of your pocket right now, you will see that it has all sorts of interesting little emblems, signs, logos, if you will, in the corners of the bill. And it says across its top, Federal Reserve Note. Well, what they're trying to do, folks, is to interlink all finances. And they're trying to do that so they can interlink their control over you. They'll know when you leave, when you come. They'll know what you munch on out there in the street. The bottom line is, you have a defense industry and you have banks that make money from strife. They make money from wars. One of the elitists was named Anthony Sutton, and he coined the phrase controlled conflict. In the minds of the elite, and I'm going to give you more backup on this next week, in the minds of the elite, World War I and World War II, think about that, those are not like local conflicts, were controlled conflicts. Yes, you know, although they may have meant it in a different vernacular, the controlled is so correct. The whole thing was controlled by the global elite to better and further their aims. It is no wonder that the global elite own the banks, and the bank, in effect, owns the government. That's why we have the insane policies that we have left over from Obama's time period and before. And Trump has made some mistakes too. There were let me give you some names. Disraeli, very famous guy. Wilson, you know, President Woodrow Wilson. Churchill, Winston Churchill, and John F. Kennedy Jr. Basically, what you're seeing here is that Disraeli, Wilson, Churchill, JFK, what these people wrote, now, this wasn't just a whisper in a hall. What they wrote will not leave any doubt in the mind of readers out there, that is going to happen. Or it, should I say, scratch that. That is happening. How's that? That is happening. As we sit here, it is happening. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Let's give you some foundational quotes here. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In 1933, he wrote a letter to one Colonel Edward House. And that letter was, quote, "The truth of the matter is, as you and I know, that a financial element in the larger centers has owned the government since the days of Andrew Jackson." That's correct. Very correct. Andrew Jackson, as some further history and some background for you on globalists and globalization and New World Order, he was a pretty tough cookie. And many people, in fact, compared him to Trump. He was irascible. He could smile when he had to. He could lead his warriors out, for 2 or 3 days at a time, do what they had to do, come back, sell, put that trash in the trash heap, if you will, and start fresh. This is what Franklin Delano Roosevelt wrote to this Colonel Edward House in 1933. Think about this, 1933, folks. More than 80 or 90 years ago. Quote, "The real truth of the matter is, as you and I know, that the financial element in the larger centers has owned the government since the days of Andrew Jackson." What Andrew Jackson said about the deep state, about the globalists, shall we say. Quote, "You are a den of vipers. I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout, excuse me. Rout you out. If people only understood the rank injustice of our monetary and banking system, there would be a revolution overnight." This is people's favorite author, if you will. How's that? And he saw it coming. Andrew Jackson tried his best to dismantle the deep state back then, and the clutches of the globalists on the United States government, even then, 100 years ago. There's an interlocking structure of the elites and their control. I'm going to go into this in more detail next week, but bottom line is the global banks own most of industry. For instance, the four apocalypse banks, the SIFI banks. I've talked about them. Told you get all your money out of them as quickly as you can. They own the majority of the stock. They own the majority of control of virtually every Fortune 500 company. I want you to think about that. Andrew Jackson was talking about the Rothschilds. I forgot to mention back on Kennedy's assassination. Not only was he going to disband the Federal Reserve, which is kind of like the fulcrum of the deep state, of the elitist, of the globalist power. But he was also preparing an executive order, and you probably don't know this either, to withdraw all troops from Vietnam, even advisors. Now, you know, if the deep state and the globalists make money through war, through those controlled conflicts, and they control where the money goes, how the money goes, and how much money they make, through the central banks, and along comes a president who screws with both. Wow. I wonder why he was assassinated on November 22nd. What do you think? I think it was Lee Harvey Oswald? Right. I want to go into some other quotes here, because I'm going to wrap this show up with this foundational information, if you will. Let's go to 1940. Here's another really interesting tidbit. Right now, I'm just trying to give you substantiation for the fact that the elitists exist. The globalists exist. The elitist globalists exist. It's 300 puppeteers. That's who right now is trying to run the world. That's why they hate Trump, because he got in their way. You know, like George Soros said, I talked about it last week, he set us back 20 years. Yeah, us being the 300 elite globalists who want to pull all the strings on all the feathers, on all the ducks. That is yours and my everyday life. And not just yours and my, we're talking about the entire global population. In 1940, there was a young guy, and he addressed this study group of the Labour Party at University College Oxford. And he told this group that he belonged to a secret group, secret. And that group was planning a Marxist takeover of Britain, Rhodesia, and South Africa by infiltrating the British Parliament and civil services. Now, does that sound familiar to you? Would that be like taking over Parliament is kind of like taking over Congress? What do you think? And would you say that the Marxist-leaning ideologies and spouting of nonsense, you know, it's not nonsense to them, the spouting of nonsense would be considered Marxist? Yes, you bet. Basically, he said that he was going to be prime minister. You got to listen to this. This is unbelievable. He was going to be prime minister of England. Right? He was about as well known as the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx was when she got elected. And if you don't think that the same forces, maybe the next generation, the same forces were at play in the eventual election of Harold Wilson, who did indeed become the prime minister of Britain from 1964 to 1970, and from 1964 to 1970, and from 1974 to 1976. In fact, does that sound familiar? Does that sound kind of like the squad here in Congress and all their left-leaning little buddies in the Senate and the House? Does that not mean when they talk about civil services in Britain, they're talking about really our departments and agencies in the United States. Now, we know they're rife with deep state folks. Okay, so all the young men that were studying at Ivy League universities, and they were continually scrutinized by their professors, but not just for schoolwork. It's because the global elite gave the mission to academia to select the best and the brightest to join the global elite so they get this done. By this, meaning world domination, new world order. Utter secrecy, absolute loyalty, all that stuff is essential to the continued success of this gang of 300, we'll call them. There is, let me give you another quote here. Professor Carol Quigley, very, very, very well known professor of political science. He wrote, "The powers of financial capitalism had another far-reaching aim, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands to be able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. This system was to be controlled in a feudalist fashion, by the central banks of the world acting in concert or by secret agreement, arrived at in private meetings and conferences. The growth of financial capitalism made it possible for them to do this. Possible to centralize world economies, control, and use of this power for the direct benefit of financiers. Winston Churchill. Now, he was a pretty sharp dude, wouldn't you agree? Sharp and tough. Here's what he wrote. He wrote this in 1920, by the way. From the days of Spartacus Weishaupt, to those of Karl Marx, to those of Trotsky, Beda Kun, Rosa Luxemburg, and Emma Goldman, this worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and reconstitution of society on the basis of arrested development, of envious malevolence and impossible equality has been steadily growing. It's played a definite, recognizable role in the tragedy of the French Revolution. It's been the mainspring of every subversive moment during the 19th century. And now at last, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworld of the great cities of Europe and America have gripped the Russian people by the hair of their heads and have become practically the undisputed masters of that enormous empire. Churchill. Let's go back to Churchill again. So this is like in the dark days of World War II, and Churchill kept muttering about the existence of a high cabal, quote, high cabal, that had been brought about by unprecedented bloodshed in human history. Unprecedented. Churchill also said, and he was talking about the elite, the globalists, quote, they have transported Lenin in a sealed truck like a plague bacillus from Switzerland into Russia. There is, how about John F. Kennedy? You know, the same John F. Kennedy that was murdered because he dared to begin to interfere with the power of the Federal Reserve, and he dared to rob profits from the industrial complex and from the globalists who need the conflicts to get done what they want. So this is John F. Kennedy, 1961. The word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, secret oaths, and secret proceedings. For we are opposed to around the world by monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It depends on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military and intelligence, economics, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. And its dissenters are silenced, not praised. Boy, that was omnipotent of him to say. I'll read that line again to you. Maybe Kennedy knew what was coming down. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. And its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is asked. No expenditure is questioned. No secret revealed. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. That is John F. Kennedy. Let's see if we got another one or two here for you. This is the best one of all. So one of the global elitists, one of the families, my story was on this last week, a different family, but same outcome. It was the Rockefeller family. I know you heard the name. And the Rockefellers, were wealthy beyond belief, and they still are. So David Rockefeller Sr. published a book, which he called his memoirs, in 2002. It stated that his family had been attacked by, quote, ideological currents. And in addition to that, I think, let me step back. Once again, this is all, I'm trying to make it uncomplicated and simple for you. Let's say that we believe that there is a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States. Can you accept that, folks, as kind of legitimate? I mean, after watching the Senate hearings and the House hearings and the Mueller nonsense and the Comey nonsense, what do you think? But anyway, David Rockefeller Sr., you'll love this. Some even believe, this is a quote, some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I am proud of it. I'm going to repeat that for you. On purpose, because I want you to listen to it again, folks. This is one of the 300 puppeteers. If this doesn't convince you, never mind the fact Eisenhower warned about it, and all these other people, and Kennedy, and Churchill. This is one of the 300 in a barefaced admission of what their mission is. My family has been attacked by ideological extremists for more than a century. Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists, and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more friendly, a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that's the charge, I sound guilty. And I am proud of it. Is there anything else I need to give you folks as a foundation to where we're going to go with this next set of shows? far smarter, more powerful men than I figured this out. And the smartest of all, is he who does not believe anything that they hear. How's that? you got to do your own research. When I stumbled across this quote from Rockefeller, my chin hit the top of the table. I mean, it is so rare for a member of that group to say anything, that they even exist, that it's not just a figment of your imagination. Here you go. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Next week we're going to get into, and hopefully I won't be quite as tired as I am for this show. Sorry about that, folks. Next week we're going to get into the United Nations. We're going to get into some of the globalists that are working things kind of while we sleep and while we eat and while we watch TV. These guys have it together, folks. They got a plan, and they're following it. And next week, we're going to start getting into that plan and all the various tools that they use. We've talked about Soros. He's one of the 300. And we've talked about how he has manipulated everything under the sun through his private NGOs and his so-called charitable foundation, Open Societies. In any event, I think you'll find the next two or three weeks quite interesting, and I hope that these quotes I gave you from Kennedy and Quigley and Winston Churchill and from Rockefeller himself, one of the elites, I hope these quotes I gave you kind of makes you think and gets you ready for where we're headed with this little series of shows. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Thanks for listening. You have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.